This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Dan Englander from Sales Schema. And Dan is the founder and CEO of Sales Schema. He's a past author of a number of books, and he's also the host of the Digital Agency Growth podcast, I believe. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Well, thanks for joining me today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You're in Brooklyn, New York.
Yes. I'm in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn on a sunny November day right now.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, so for people out there, tell us, what is Sales Schema?
Basically, we are a fractional new business team focusing on agencies and marketing service companies, which is a jargony way of saying that we do campaigns through targeted outreach and a tasteful way to keep the pipeline full. And solve, a pretty big problem for a lot of our clients, which is ensuring that new business and opportunities are consistent regardless of how busy or not busy the agency gets. Because a lot of the times in any service business, but I think especially the agency world, there's a tendency to get caught up in projects and then forget to stay consistent on the new business front, which is something we're looking to help with.
Totally makes sense. So I think there's a lot of, it's a good point because I think there's a lot of confusion out there about selling. Right? Because there's like these old ideas that, we kind of get stuck in, and then there's like new technology, and then there's this marketing automation boom. So I think that creates a little bit of confusion for people. So like, as an expert in this area, like what do you think the state of the nation is, first of all?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think the state of the nation is confusion, both the literal nation and our little world here.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that what's happened is there's just this ridiculously big buffet of options for people. And usually and we're all prey to this. It's not like we're that much smarter than everyone else. I think we've just done this a lot, in one particular area, is there's a tendency to focus, of course, on software and tactics and all these different things, as opposed to starting with who's doing what, what resources do you have and what skill sets do you have? Then what channels do you pick based on those skill sets? And then onwards from there. For what we do, we're big believers in knocking on doors in the right way, in a tasteful way, as something that can and should always be done to win new business. So people get hung up on the channel, email, LinkedIn, phone, direct mail, whatever. We do all of the above, but we're big believers in being able to build that approach out for any given, B2B enterprise to be effective. In our world, it happens to be agencies, but I think it could work in a lot of different spaces. So our whole belief is that if you do that the right way and you get used to that process, then it scales to the size of your whole market. And you essentially you'll never go hungry again because you'll always be able to pick up the phone, open an email and get the right person on the line. It takes time, doesn't make it easy, but it's definitely worth doing. So our whole thinking is, regardless of whatever inbound channel, whatever tactic you pick, doing outreach is pretty important.
So I think part of the confusion is, you mentioned it, which is around this proliferation of tools, right? And as someone that obviously deals in technology, sometimes we get lost in that weeds. So what is the place of tools like in your opinion, because you're obviously getting results for people and it's always interesting to look under the hood and see what you're doing.
Yeah. And it's funny because I get asked about tools all the time. And right. Then a lot of the time I'm just like not in a good position to help people because I'm like, I don't really know. Our team, they're using X, I think, but they were on Y last week. Like it's like sort of like asking like what hammer do you pick? I don't know. We use a hammer that works right until we break a piece off of it, then we have to go get a new hammer, and that's pretty much everything. I could definitely go down the rabbit hole and nerd out on tools. I think the better thing to think about as it applies to tools, and I know you focus on automation a lot too, is kind of figuring out what's the right level of automation in any given situation. And the tendency is to over automate, I think, especially when it comes to B2B sales and the sort of thing where you don't have as much, a magnitude of scale as you might with the people that are putting out a lot of the thought leadership and a lot of the articles, is like a giant consumer enterprise might. So with that, like, for example, we're big believers in, as soon as a response is coming in from a prospect, they are getting probably a lot less automation than somebody that you haven't qualified yet. And then that keeps going. And onwards from there. So I might have lost your question, but
I think you're hitting on the point, which is, I think people pick tools thinking that this is going to be the thing that saves them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm, as someone that's, you know, knee deep in making your living this way, it's always interesting to hear like, yeah, you know, if without this tool, we would not be successful, but that's not what I'm hearing, which is you're more focused on, it sounds like, the activity and the outreach to the right person and positioning.
Exactly. And I think that in that aim, one thing that we've seen change like over the years and probably more rapidly recently is just the need for personalization. And that's one of these buzzwords, right? So whenever you say personalization, people nod their heads but the devil's in the details, right? And actually figuring out what is the meaningful level of personalization to the point where you're not getting diminishing returns, right? If you were to write everybody a beautiful, you know, CEO crafted love letter, that's cool, but it may not work and it may be more energy than is worth it for going after your market. So for us, you know, I think there's a lot of ways to do this well, but tactically what it's meant for us is figuring out who's likely to take a meeting with our client in the right organization or in an organization that's closely related to a place they can do business, and the person that will actually take the meeting based on a personal commonality, for example, as opposed to beating our heads against the wall trying to get that CMO or that high level person to be sold to, right? Which is possible, and it's something we've done a lot of, and there's a place for it. But what we're more about doing is figuring out, okay, who's actually going to take this meeting. So, for example, if Michael wanted to sell to Salesforce, we could find, you know, who went to University of Waterloo. I think I saw on your profile. Who are the C-level people in Salesforce that went to University of Waterloo, and then contact those people, and they'll actually take a meeting. And maybe that meeting goes nowhere, you know, it's possible, but if you get on enough of those meetings, enough of them are going to go somewhere. So I think taking a step back and thinking about, okay, who is actually going to take a meeting with me in a place, and like, where is a worthwhile, you know, meeting for me to take, and playing a little bit of a longer game more consistently is paying, you know, way higher dividends for our clients.
Interesting. Okay. So that makes sense. So it's like, find, you know, build rapport through commonality, it sounds like, is still important. Yeah. Like,
and it could be a lot of different. I mean, the college thing is one thing that we've often done in the past, but it could also be, you know, what if you were to reach out to people that are in an organization that you work with that have since moved on to a new organization, and use that as a way in and say, hey, you know, we've done a lot of business with GE. Would love to hear saw you used to work there. Would love to hear what you're doing in your new place of work, see how we can help out. You know, that sort of thing works a whole lot better than just saying like, hey, here's our case studies. Here's a pitch video, talk to us. And I think the problem is, and this isn't to like do a send up of startups, because I think with the tech startup, you really can sell more directly, right? Because there's something that's really dynamic, that's visual, that's like, you know, we solve this problem, we have incredible technology. And some service companies can do that a little bit more easily. Like, for example, we can sell for ourselves differently than we can sell for clients. And that's because we're so specialized. We say, hey, we help agencies get great meetings and close business. People will take a meeting with me for that. You know, I don't have to necessarily go to the same links, although that might be changing. But our clients, you know, an agency, I know all of your audience obviously aren't agencies, but any company that the differentiators aren't experienced until after the experience of working with that company, you've got to be a little more crafty, I think, because people are, you know, it doesn't matter how awesome you are, how much experience you have, it's still going to be an uphill battle to get that meeting with the right person if you're directly selling them. Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay. I like that. So I think one of the things that I advocate in, really the reason I wrote Automate and Grow was because I think that, you know, we get stuck in looking for saviors in the tech, right? And what I'm saying is probably similar to what you're saying, which is, before you buy or build something, have a plan. And, you know, that plan is, in the case of sales, is a sales playbook and a traffic and conversion plan. So when someone works with Sales Schema, what's the plan?
Yeah. So first, it's not to do what it's really about avoiding certain things as opposed to doing certain things. I think one of those is mindset, like getting into the idea of treating sales as if it's working out or eating healthily. It's not something you just get to stop doing because you get busy. So really making sure our clients are on the same page about that expectation and about that sort of consistency and so on from there. And then, you know, from then on, what we like to avoid is a situation where our clients are day trading, where they're saying like, hey, there's this new industry or this industry where there's lots of money being spent. Let's go do business there, you know, and really starting with with where our clients have been successful in the past. Cause we, you know, there's only certain things that we have control over. We have control over who we reach out to. We have control over who sees the message. We have control over, you know, who we're contacting and so on. And a pretty good amount of control over who agrees to meet to our clients. Although that's even that's partially outside of our control. What we don't have control over is like, you know, our clients' skills and knowledge of a particular domain, and we're not going to be able to just like upload that into their brains like in the Matrix. So what I'm getting to is where we like to start is figuring out where do they have the most historic success, you know, and not getting caught up in shiny objects and that sort of thing. And from there, you know, what we do moves pretty quickly just based on, you know, this is for us personally. And I do want to be helpful to people that never hire us as well, but we've built, you know, a proprietary database. So that allows us to move quickly and figure out, okay, here are the people with commonalities that are in the areas our clients can do business. Let's contact them and get them on the phone. But even if our clients never do that, it's really more about making sure that we're working with somebody that has the time and motivation, and setting the expectation that there's going to be three buckets that people fall into. And again, if people never hire us, it's still going to be the same dynamic. There's going to be a very small part of the pie where there's the right decision maker that's actively searching for a solution, very small percentage, not sustainable to rely on them. Luck, it's great when that happens, though. A slightly bigger percentage, let's say, I don't know, 30%, 20% of getting in with the right person at the wrong time, in which case it's a long re-engagement game. It's about staying top of mind. If you can proactively sell them something like, I don't know, an audit, a pilot project, a strategy, great. And then the biggest part of the pie are those indirect connectors. So the people that aren't going to be able to sign on the dotted line for you, but can help you either by way of referral or market intelligence, and so on. And those people are by far the most lucrative group because for the reasons I mentioned, they're going to be able to say things that no one can ever find out, right? They're going to say, you need to go talk with Bob because I happen to know there's an active project with Bob right now or whatever. But more than that, when they make that referral, they're going to have way more authority and trust than anything else you could do. So that means when they refer you, that decision maker is going to take you much more seriously. So that's kind of, so a lot of what we do is starting out with expectation setting and, you know, making sure that our clients are ready for that process.
And then what, maybe so people have the right expectations, what does it look like working with someone like Sales Schema in kind of the first 30, 60 days?
Yeah. So the first thing is basically, you know, the logistics. So getting a list approved, making sure that it's, you know, we like to encourage our clients to have an open mind to talking to people that they might not have normally, right? So getting them, here's the list. And yes, we want you to talk to the CTO and not just the CMO because that CTO is going to take the call with you. So from there, you know, we're basically loading our clients up with calls. Like we're getting a lot of calls on the books. And then, you know, it's about zeroing in on the right people, basically. So what that means is they're getting on lots of calls all over the place. They're getting on calls that don't go anywhere. They're getting on calls that are medium, and then they're probably getting a few that are really good. And then them continuing their process from there. So from there, basically every 2 weeks or more in real time, we're updating a pipeline. And then we're saying, you know, okay, did you contact this person? What's the status? Were you, you know, do you have a next step with them? You know, do we need, and then from there, every 30 days, do you have a way to re-engage this person? Okay, the timing was bad when you contacted. Great. 80% of the time, 90% of the time, the timing is going to be off. Do you have a way to relevantly re-engage them again? So for example, we can't, you know, do this for our client because they had the conversation, but we're saying you should contact Bob with, do you have new work relevant to them? Do you have new products or services? Was there something they told you about what's going on? Is there new market intelligence? Is there something happening in the industry you can talk about? And sometimes the answer might just be no, like there's not a good reason to talk, but a lot of the time there is. So that's another thing that we're helping our clients stay accountable with in that first 30 days. To get more technical, another thing that we're doing is even when a prospect can't help our client, maybe that's called that doesn't go anywhere, that happens, we can still zero in on the right person. And I think that even if people never hire us to an extent, maybe they can't do it as quickly or scalably as we could, that we can go see where the mutual connections are, you know, so we can see, okay, this person that they talked to that didn't go anywhere, or maybe, you know, they are mutually connected to the CMO. Now we can do outreach to that person individually. So that's kind of some of the things we're doing.
Great. Well, listen, I want to be conscious of your time. So how do people get in touch with you? And is there anything we haven't touched on?
Yeah. So to get in touch with me, the best, our site is probably a good place, salesschema.com, and happy to chat, you know, outside of that, just dan@salesschema.com is a great place. We have, you know, webinars and stuff that people can opt in for and all that good stuff that should be useful. Yeah, and in terms of, not touching on things, probably I'm trying to think of a good thing. I think that the main thing is just, you know, making sure, just taking a step back with this stuff. I think that, you know, everything I've covered often, and when I'm on the other side of this, watching, like, you know, listening to podcasts, watching webinars, I tend to get excited about different tactics and stuff.
Right.
And the main thing is just figuring out how to ship on something. My buddy Taylor just put out a great article about, you got to get the turkey out of the oven, you know? So even if you, even if this is really simple and it's like literally you just contacting 50 people, you know, that are in your personal Rolodex, even if it never scales and it's messy, just try to get something, even if it's like right before Thanksgiving or before the holidays, like just get it out the door, start on something. It's probably my best piece of advice. Yep.
Yeah. Cause again, you're focused on like actual, let's have real conversations with real people about what's going on. And it's non pitchy. It sounds like it's non confrontational. It's more like here's how we can maybe help and opening the discussion.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've optimized it so much over the years. You know, we were not at the place we are now a year ago. And we've also just seen the way that, like, we've also just seen buying habits change a lot, like on the B2B front. And I think it's, and our domain's, you know, kind of focused on agencies. So might not apply to everybody, but my guess is it's across the board to some extent. And it's just, there's a lot, it's a cliche thing to say, but it's true, but there's just a lot more providers. There's a lot more competition. A lot of sacred cows are now getting killed because everybody's remote, which is both, there's both challenges and huge opportunities there. I think the challenge is that, there's a lot more people probably competing or possibly doing to some extent what your listeners are doing. But on the upside, there's a lot, again, the sacred cow thing, there's fewer sacred cows. So there's companies that we're seeing that are way more open to outsource stuff that they would never outsource, you know, just earlier this year. There's a lot of this sort of like preconceived thinking of, oh, we can never do this out of house. This would have to be in house. And now everybody's remote. So, you know, I think that represents a huge opportunity.
Yeah. And I can say, I mean, you can anticipate that's just going to get crazier, where there's probably going to be a boom in people starting little agencies or bigger agencies and just trying to find their own work, so to speak. Right. Like, so I think,
Yeah,
it makes a lot of sense. And companies at the same time too, like they want less risk you're taking ownership of as an agency. That makes sense. So
exactly. And just one last thing is that, I think that there's a lot of people that, you know, might've been in one of these hurt industries, whether it's like retail or restaurants or whatever, or like, oh crap, do we need to pivot right now? And there is survival, and I can't tell the survival aspects, and I can't say what everyone should or shouldn't do, but I do think that, you know, there is going to be a real moat around these companies that stuck it out with these tough industries. Cause if you think about it, like nobody that's starting an agency right now is going to be like, oh, I'm going to serve restaurants, you know, but yet restaurants are going to be back. And the agencies that focus on them are going to be so powerful. So I think there's power to just sticking it through. Yeah.
Well, that's probably good news for my friend Phil James from good milkshake. He's in that space, but I know he's trying to diversify too. But
yeah, well, sometimes you gotta. So it's not to say that's wrong to diversify, but yeah.
All right. Well, I want to wrap with a couple quick fun things. So the first thing is, if you could only recommend one book in the whole world to people, what would that be?
Oh man, that's great. There's a lot. I'm just going to pull out The War of Art. By Stephen Pressfield. I love that book. Yeah,
not to be confused with The Art of War, but The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield is great.
Yeah, fantastic book.
Love that book. Jim Rohn says that you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with. So who do you, Dan, spend the most time with?
Oh man. Okay. So lately, my girlfriend Sarah. So she's in finance. So I kind of get, but she kind of has a. It's interesting getting a window into that space. So that's one. My buddy Nate, who runs an info products course focused on drumming and drummers.
Oh,
another buddy Jan that kind of does what we do, except for lawyers. That's four. And then my landlord Brian, who is a 70-year-old man from Trinidad. So I think it's a pretty good, you know, diverse group of perspectives. So that's been good so far. Yeah.
I like the fact that you know that someone is from Trinidad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he's been lived in Bedside since the '70s, and he was a produce broker, and he's been retired for years now.
No way.
It's kind of like an interesting older school take on entrepreneurship to get exposed to.
Oh, I like that. That's cool. Yeah, yeah, I always joke with people because I grew up in Canada, and we have everyone's something in Canada. So we know all about the Trinis and the Jamaicans and the Guyanese, and we have a lot more depth of what we understand about people. And I think New York's got that too, which I love.
Well, the cool thing about Canada is that it's a smaller country population wise. So that America, we like ring the bell about diversity and immigrant country, but there's way more of that in a way smaller area, it seems like, in Canada. So it doesn't
come. Oh yeah. Your neighbors are always something. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you, Dan, changing the world?
Oh, that's a good question. So I like to think that we are helping people communicate, more tastefully, more and more consistently, and with less BS than a lot of other options. So at least we're trying to. Yeah,
that is a very noble thing, actually, because there's a lot of BS out there.
Yeah, yeah, I'm working on it.
Especially on LinkedIn and email, and there's a lot of stuff to ignore, right?
Exactly. there's a lot of bad incentives, I think, to sell silver bullets and that sort of thing. And we've got to have something that we sell that has, an upside, because there is, a big upside to getting this right. But it's a fine line, to not BS people. So,
yeah, I think that actually that's a good point, which is, it's like trying to have real conversations probably means that you're more authentic, right? As opposed to just spinning stuff.
Right. And I think the rub with that is you got to get on a lot more conversations, but it's worth it. So I think that's part of it. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. So the final thing is, when we have interesting people on the podcast, we like you to nominate other interesting people. We typically talk to experts or entrepreneurs. We're interested in anyone that's either starting something or that has some impact on other people as far as automating or growing businesses. So who would you, Dan, like to nominate as a future guest of Automate and Grow that you can introduce us to?
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of good people that I think it would make sense to talk to. And I have a hunch that you might already know this person just based on the lanes that you're in. That's Jimmy Rose.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, with Content Snare. So he's in Australia, so you have to figure out time zones. But he's focusing on, he focuses on the agency space, but does a whole lot with automation. And he has a company, Content Snare, basically deals with the exchange of content in a way that's easier than if you use Google Drive or something like that. So making the content exchange seamless in the context of like a service business or an agency business.
Oh, cool. Okay. So it's Jimmy Rose of Content Snare, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Terrific. You've been nominated as a future guest of Automate and Grow. Dan, I want to acknowledge you for the great work that you're doing, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. Yeah, great questions. Appreciate it.
No problem. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode, hopefully with Jimmy Rose of Automate and Grow.